Welcome to the Fidelity Bank 2017 full year and Q1 2018 results conference call. There will be a question and answer session at the end of the call, beg your pardon. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Nnamdi Okonkwo. I'm CEO, Fidelity Bank. I welcome you all to this conference call. With me today are members of the executive management team. I'll commence by speaking about the overall performance for 2017 financial year. The year was a landmark year for us at Fidelity as we returned to the international capital market and issued a very successful $400 million euro bond. We commenced interim audit of our financials to improve our governance process, and this will continue going forward. Finally, we delivered strong set of numbers, which is a result of our disciplined execution of our medium-term strategy, which we crafted earlier and had disclosed in previous calls. Our 2017 numbers showed strong growth in key revenue lines due to significant traction in our chosen business segments and a corresponding decline in our operating expenses. This is in spite of the high inflationary environment. PBT for 2017 was 20.3 billion. This is a remarkable growth of 84% when compared to the same period last year. In absolute numbers, specifically, PBT actually grew by over 9.2 billion, and this was driven mainly by 7.7 billion growth in operating income and combined with a 1.5 billion naira decline in operating expenses. This led to cost income ratio of 67.5%. NIM remained strong at 7.3% for the year under review, despite reduction in yields on liquid assets from the third quarter of last year. Nonetheless, the growth in yield on our earning assets has continued to outpace the increase in funding costs. Our average yield on earning assets stood at 15.4% compared to an average funding cost of 7.2%. We made total gross impairments of about 11.3 billion naira, which is 30% above the 2016 financial year figures due to the increased provisioning in telecoms and communication sectors. Cost of risk was 1.5%, and NPL declined to 6.4% from 6.6% reported in 2016 due to the growth in risk assets outpacing the growth in NPL volumes. We saw significant reduction in absolute NPL numbers across nine sectors to the tune of 11.3 billion. However, this was offset by 11.4 billion growth in NPLs in the downstream and midstream oil and gas sectors. Our risk assets grew by 7% to close at 768 billion naira. However, only 4% of this growth was due to currency conversion rate of 333 naira, which we adopted. I'll be mentioning, we'll be discussing that further. Our total deposits declined by 2.2% to 775 billion naira from 793 billion naira in 2016 due to high yields on fixed income security instruments and specific one-off deposit payments. However, at the retail end, our retail bank strategy continued to deliver impressive results as savings deposits increased by 15.2% to close at 178.6 billion naira. And savings accounts currently accounts for about 23% of total deposits from 19.5% in 2016. This has improved our low-cost deposit ratio to 77% of total deposits. On digital banking front, it now accounts for 25% of our fee income as customers' adoption of our mobile / internet platforms improved to 35% in 2017. And led to 21% reduction in our vault cash holdings. Other regulatory ratios remained above required thresholds. Capital adequacy ratio closed at 16% and liquidity ratio closed at 35.9%. Now, the performance update. The key highlights of our quarter one performance, because I'm going to speak to quarter one now, the key highlights of our Q1 performance, PBT was up 3% for the period, coming in at approximately 5 billion naira. NIM declined to 6.7% in line with lower yield environment. We will be guiding for 6.5 to 7% on NIM for 2018. Net loans declined by 3.9% due to impact of increased IFRS 9 provisions and significant customer pay down in upstream oil and gas sector. The impact of IFRS 9 was an additional 28.2 billion naira. However, this did not affect our capital adequacy ratio, as we already had over 28.8 billion in our non-distributable reserves. Therefore, our Q1 capital adequacy ratio was 16% and liquidity ratio was 36%. Also in this Q1, NPL declined from 6.4% to 6.3% due to improvements in downstream and transport sector. Now, Nine Mobile. We have today made total provisions of 50% on our Nine Mobile exposure as at Q1 2018. If this exposure was classified, our NPL ratio would be 8.7%. Deposit book was up 10.8% with growth across all products and deposits. Our deposit is now at 860 billion naira. This provides us the solid headroom we need for our planned lending in the coming quarters. We continue to see traction in our retail strategy, with savings deposits increasing by over 5% in quarter one of 2018 to 188 billion. And we are on track for the fifth consecutive year of double-digit growth in savings deposits. Digital banking continues to also show traction, with customer penetration stroke adoption increasing, and this has led to 30% drop in cash holding over the last 15 months. Nonetheless, the growth in the yield on our earning assets has continued to outpace the increase in funding costs. Okay. So, I think we'll go straight to the financial details, and I'll hand over to my colleague Bolahan to take it from there, and then we'll take questions thereafter. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Namdi. I'll just go straight into the presentation. I'll be starting from slide 2. Which is just an outline of the presentation, and then I'll go straight to slide 5. It just shows an evolution of our retail and digital banking progress report. From 2013 to 2017, the customer numbers are up over 64%. 35% of our customers are now using the digital banking platform. Savings deposit has grown by 114% over that period. In the last 4 years, it's been double-digit growth, and it's at 178 billion. 75% of transactions are now done using the digital banking channels, and then digital banking now contributes 25% of fee-based income. I'll now move to slide 9, where you have the performance highlights. I think Namdi has spoken about most of them, but let me just speak about the coverage ratio, which is now 109%. And foreign currency loans are now at 46% of the total loan book. What are the key drivers? I'm on slide 10, the financial highlights. The key lines that drove the growth in gross earnings, trade income, account maintenance fees, interest income on loans and liquid assets. We expect this to continue this year, albeit at a slower pace, especially from the fund-based income. NIM was 7.3%, up from 6.4% in the previous year, mainly driven by the higher yields on the loan book and on liquid assets. Net fee income was just up 3.3% because of the decline in electronic banking income due to the restriction on international card transactions. Costs were down 2.3%. Cost-to-income ratio is 67.5%. We recorded a cost reduction of $4.9 billion on about 38% of our expense lines. Profitability is up despite the 30% growth in impairment costs, and that's because of the strong revenue growth and the decline in costs. I'm now on slide 11. Speak on customer deposits, down 2.2%. We've made total payments on TSA. We did an additional $175 million in 2017, and so that was the major reason for decline in the total deposit base. Risk assets at $767 billion, 4% of that is due to the currency conversion rate, and then 3% is due to pure play loan growth. Online mobile, it's a watch-listed account in our books. We've taken a total provision of 50% as at Q1. As at the end of 2017, if it was classified, NPL ratio would be 8.8%, but for Q1 it will have been 8.7%. The estimation that IFRS 9 will reduce total liquidity by $28.2 billion, that has been reflected in the Q1 numbers, but there was no impact on capital adequacy because regulatory risk reserves had $28.8 billion in it. Slide 12 just shows a breakdown of the income statement, line-by-line breakdown. On most lines, we had double-digit growth, and then operating income was up 11.9%, expenses down 2.3%, and then 84% growth in profitability. On slide 13, you have the quarter-on-quarter breakdown, and if you look at the performance across the quarters, it was an average of about $5 billion. The last quarter was $4 billion, and that's because of the significantly higher provisions we had to take from $2.5 billion in quarter three to roughly $4 billion in quarter four. So that was an additional about $1.5 billion. Slide 14 just shows the balance sheet breakdown. You see a decline in the volume of treasury bills, and then you also see a decline in the total deposit book. The cash reserve is up, despite the fact that the deposit book is down. Average cash reserve ratio is over 30%. Slide 15 is a quarter-on-quarter breakdown of the balance sheet across all the lines. And then you see customer loans are up from an FCY basis, but they've come down in Q1 2018. On slide 17, just shows a breakdown of the income lines, account maintenance fee, trade income, FX income. Most of the lines had a double-digit growth apart from the e-banking income. Obviously, a key driver of this was the increased liquidity from Q2 last year in the FX markets, and that drove a lot of the transactional income you're seeing. On slide 18, net interest margin up to 7.3%. Yields peaked at 15.4% for the 2017 financial year, and then with funding costs at 7.2%. This year, we expect a lower yield environment. We expect funding costs to be down. We also expect the yields to be down, but we expect NIM to come in at anything between 6.5% and 7%, which means we need to have a larger earning assets book to maintain the same revenue trajectory. I'm on slide 19. It just shows the breakdown from an OPEX perspective. Technology costs are up 54%. A lot of that is driven from what we're doing from a digital banking perspective. We expect that to still increase slightly this year, but we expect the benefits to far outweigh the costs on that line. Slide 20 just shows the key expense lines and where we're seeing a reduction. And overall, expenses are down 2.3%. And then slide 21 is just a quarter-on-quarter breakdown. I'll go to slide 24, which is an analysis of the funding base. Debt securities are up 46%, obviously due to the new Eurobond that was issued. And then from a savings perspective, the growth is 15.2%, 23.5 billion. There was very strong growth in the fourth quarter of the year. Slide 25 speaks to deposits, and the change in the currency conversion rate just accounted for about a 1% growth in the deposit base. So in actual fact, when you look at the deposits and you strip out the impact of the 53 billion, even if you also strip out the impact of the currency conversion rate, there was an absolute growth in the numbers. But by Q1, the deposit book was up 860 billion, and that gives us enough headroom for the planned lending for this year. On slide 26, which looks at retail banking analysis, you see that 44% of local deposits are now from the retail banking sector, 23% of the total deposits are from savings, and then from an asset perspective, it's just 5.6% of the loan book. We've been quite cautious with the retail assets because of the lower consumer disposable income and delayed salary payments over the last 2 years. On slide 28, which speaks to the loan book, and the absolute loan book is up 52 billion, which shows a 7% growth. A lot of what you see from the upstream growth is just due to currency conversion, and also some of what you see from the general commerce segment, which is the trade book that has not cycled out. Slide 29 just shows a quarter-on-quarter trend of the loan book, and if you look at the major segments, oil and gas upstream is about 19% of the book. The government is about 14% of the book. Transport is about 9% of the book. Manufacturing, about another 10% of the book. And power, about 13% of the book. And then slide 30 shows the breakdown of the loans into FCY and LCY. It's 46% to 44%. It's still roughly about the same ratio over the period. Excluding the impact of the currency conversion, the loan book will have been roughly about 740 billion. And the NPL is shown on slide 31, and you'll see absolute NPLs were up 2.5%. NPL ratio dropped from 6.6 to 6.4%. We had a decline in most of the sectors, about 9 of the sectors, but then we had a major account that was classified in the downstream segment, and that single account accounts for about 70-80% of the additional NPL in the downstream sector. And so the oil and gas book was up 11.4. It sort of offset all the gains we had made in the other segments. But we're pleased with the reduction we're seeing across the manufacturing, general commerce, transport, and the retail segment. Slide 32 just shows the key pressure points on the loan book. On the NPL book, oil and gas downstream is 22%, transport is 27%, general commerce 11%, and manufacturing 14.5%. Slide 33 speaks to what I've been talking about earlier. The coverage ratio is 100.9 plus regulatory reserves. And then in quarter one, the coverage ratio was above that. It was about 117% in quarter one. That was due to the fact that the NPL book has slightly come down in quarter one, and from a ratio perspective, from 6.4 to 6.3. Slide 34 speaks to capital adequacy. It's at 16%. Excluding the regulatory adjustment of 15.2, it will have been 17.9%. From a Tier 2 capital perspective, the only the two components there are the local currency debt. We're taking a haircut of 20% now because it's less than 5 years. By May, we'll be taking a haircut of 40%, but we expect that the capitalization of profits in H1 should more than compensate for that. Slide 35 just shows the breakdown of the business units and what they contribute. About 62% of the loan book is still in the corporate segment, and about 38% in the other segments. By quarter one, it had come down to about 60%. Slide 37 looks at our guidance for 2017 against the actual and the guidance for 2018. We're guiding for a lower net interest margin. loan growth of about 7.5 to 10%. The loan book was down in Q1 because of the net loan book was down in Q1 because of the impact of the additional IFRS 9 provisioning. The gross loan book was also down by about 0.1%. Deposits were guiding for 10 to 15%. We started off the year strong with about 10.8% growth in deposits. NPL 6% to 6.5%. Cost of risk at about 1.25%. And an ROE of about 12.5%, which is an average of about 25% growth in profitability for the year. Thank you, and we'll now take questions.
Thank you. We'll now open the lines for questions. To ask a question, please press 0 on your phone's keypad or 7 to cancel your question request. Once again, to ask a question, please press 0 on your phone's keypad or 7 to cancel the request. Your first question is from Ola Ewakoro from SBG Securities. Go ahead.
Hello, thank you very much for the presentation. I just have a few questions. The first one, so looking into 2018, given your credit growth expectations, what sectors would you be looking at to drive credit growth? Then also, on the one of the earlier slides on digital banking being 25% of net fees and commissions, what is the target for 2018, given that you know, management sees high potential in this revenue line? Then also, I need some clarity on the conversion rate. So as at 9 months 2017, you had mentioned that there was a blended rate of CBN's rate and INE window rate at, I think, 331. But then this full year 2017 results is at 333. So there isn't much of a difference, but it seems like there was like a different currency conversion on some lines for the full year 2017 results. So please correct me if I'm wrong. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ola. For loan growth, we're looking at FMCGs, we're looking at the manufacturing segment, and then we'll start looking at the retail segment again. We should be introducing mobile lending product sometime in H2. From a digital banking perspective, contribution to total income, we expect it to be between 25 and 30%. That's the target. In terms of currency conversion, we use the average of the IME window and the CBN rate. So we started using that in Q3 2017, and that's the same rate that's the same methodology that was adopted for the full year. I think the actual conversion rate for the full year was 333.7. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Tolu Alamutu from Exotic. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the call. I just have, I think, three key issues to address. The first is on lending to the upstream oil and gas sector. I think you mentioned that there was a repayment in the first quarter. Can you confirm if that was Seplat, please? Second issue is to do with capital. As you mentioned, the only thing contributing to your Tier 2 capital now is the Naira bond, and it's amortizing quite fast. Would you potentially look to issue another Naira-denominated subordinated bond, or maybe a subordinated Euro bond to replace that, please? And then finally, on deposit costs. It looks like a significant part of the deposit growth that you saw in Q1 was from time deposits, and that's led to an increase in deposit costs. Is there any plan to maybe shift more towards lower cost deposits through the course of the year to achieve your NIM target, or will there be more growth in time deposits in coming quarters? Thank you.
The pay down from the oil and gas upstream book, it's not the customer you mentioned. Even if it was the customer, we will not want to mention customer names on the call, but it's not that customer. It's another customer, and it was a syndicated facility. It's not only a facility that Fidelity was involved in, so it was a syndicated facility. In terms of the second question was on the Naira bond. We will not be looking to issue a subordinated Euro bond. We could look to the local funding market to do CPs or other funding structures if we believe that pricing from a yield environment is attractive from a lending book perspective. So we could be looking at that. And in looking at the deposit growth over the first quarter, it was not only from time deposits. Demand deposits were up over the same period. Savings deposits were up over the same period. And then time deposits were also up over the same period. I think what had happened is that over the last 15 months, we have had a marked reduction in our time deposit book. But we believe that with the lower yield environment, we're beginning to see some better pricing across that book. In specific terms, demand deposits were up 8% in quarter one by 34 billion. Our savings deposits were up 10 billion, 5.4% growth, and then our time deposits were up 40 billion. If you take the total growth in demand deposits and savings deposits, it was roughly about 43 billion, which was more than the growth in time deposits of 40 billion. So we believe that once the pricing on the time deposits starts coming down due to the lower yield environment, then it will be more attractive to take some of those deposits if they meet our pricing perspective. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question is from Ola Ogunsoya from RingPap. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for the presentation. My first question is with regards to the single obligor charge. It seems to be a recurring thing now. So I'm just wondering, is this the same exposure? And why has it been very difficult to get that below the single obligor limit? And also, if you could just enlighten us on how that charge is calculated against capital. So is that a percentage of the entire exposure? Also, with regards to the dividend payout ratio for 2017, I guess the reason why the target wasn't achieved was because of the thin buffers versus the regulatory minimum. So has Fidelity considered giving up its international license? Or I guess a better way to phrase the question will be how you're thinking about your expansion out of Nigeria in the medium to long term, and is there really a need to hold on to your international license? Thirdly, on the tax rate, so why was it so low in 2017? And I see you still expect that to be around 10 to 12%. Why is that the case? And my final question is on the proceeds of the Eurobond raised. So I mean, when it was raised, management indicated that most of that will be used to finance the trade book. So I just wanted to get an update of, you know, how big that book is today versus prior to the raise of the Eurobond, and how you see that impacting your numbers going forward. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. For the single obligor charge, because it's a foreign currency loan, when the currency conversion rate was changed from 305 to 333, which is about roughly a 10% increase, the absolute exposure also went up. So the way it's calculated is that your single obligor limit is calculated, and then the difference between the balance on the loan and your single obligor limit is taken as a charge. So one of the reasons why it's been much more difficult than anticipated to get it below is because the foreign currency loan and the absolute amount has increased because of the currency conversion rate. On the dividend payout, we just felt at this point in time, given the implementation of IFRS 9, it will be good to conserve capital. And since it's the first year it's been implemented, let's see how it plays out. Obviously, from a restriction perspective, we could have paid out more than that, but we could have paid out up to 30%, but it was due to a capital retention strategy. In terms of expansion to the rest of Africa, I think we've said it a number of times. In the short to medium term, we do not intend to go outside Nigeria. So the question is, why are we keeping an international banking license? We've also said that we have aspirations to become one of the systemically important banks. So even if we do not have an international subsidiary, we'll continue to benchmark ourselves with some of the standards that the central bank is using. In terms of when we raised the Eurobond and in terms of the trade finance book, if you look at loan growth from our Q1 investor presentation, you see a lot of loan growth in the manufacturing segment. A lot of that is also to FMCGs in that segment. From a cycling perspective, you will see the impact in subsequent quarters, but suffice to say that it's also helped the trade book. The trade income was lower in quarter four. Obviously, from a trade cycle, a lot of trade transactions are done before the end of quarter four. But when you look at the Q1 numbers, you'll have seen that there's been an uptick in the trade income compared to quarter four. On the tax rate, yes, we don't expect it to still move above. We don't expect it to get to the 25-30% range. We have a lot of reliefs and capital allowances, and we think we can still keep it within the 10-15% range for this year.
Okay, but to specifically answer her question as well about whether we have any plans to return our international banking license, Bolaho has spoken to the point about keeping it open. Therefore, no, the answer is we do not have plans to return the international banking license. Because as we progress, if there are opportunities, eventually we might reconsider. But for now, we're staying focused on our strategy. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question is from Gloria Fadigbe from CSL Stockbrokers. Please go ahead.
Hello, good afternoon. most of my questions have been answered, but just to clarify the state of your loan book, can you just clarify how much provision has been taken on your nine mobile exposure and your power sector exposures? Are you seeing any asset quality constraint there, or is that entire loan book still performing? That's my question.
For nine mobile, we've taken a total of 50% on our exposure there. The power sector, there are some challenges, especially for some of the discos. So we have some of the assets there that we have watchlisted, but we have not classified yet. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question is from Yulia DiMambro. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much for the presentation. I have a question regarding your capital adequacy ratio. Could you please talk about the movement in your CAR in Q4 of last year relative to Q3? What was behind the decline? If I look at the footnotes in your four-year disclosure, it looks to me like that the main reason for the move was a reduction in your retained earnings, and perhaps that was due to higher regulatory reserves. And if that was the case, could you please tell us what sort of exposure that was for? Thank you.
Sorry, were you talking about the movement in capital adequacy between Q3 and Q4, or between 2016 and 2017?
Q3 2017 versus Q4 2017.
Okay. Q3 2017 versus Q4 2017. So, two reasons. If you look at the total risk-weighted assets over the period, the total risk-weighted assets over the period, that's number one. Number two, if you look at the retained earnings, there was not much of a movement from a retained earnings perspective because at Q3, the profits we had capitalized in Q3 was the profit, the H1 audited profit. That's what we had capitalized as a Q3. But what we're showing as a Q4 is the retained earnings for this year less the proposed dividend payment. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question is from Alex Ayub. Please go ahead.
Hey, thank you very much for the presentation. Just following up on the car, I'm sorry, I'm still not understanding why there was this decline from 17.3 to 16%, so it would be good if you can clarify that further between end of September 17 and December 17. And also, what's your strategy here? I mean, you want to grow, you want to stay, you want to become a systematically important bank, but your CAR is 16% against the regulatory requirement of 15%. So what kind of CAR are you aiming at, especially given that you may need more provisions for Nine Mobile or because of other potential challenges in 2018? What's your strategy in terms of your CAR, and where do you want to be toward the end of the year?
Strategy for CAR is not to be below 16%. After implementation of IFRS 9, we are currently at 16%. By May, we will take an additional 20% haircut on our local currency bond. But we believe that the profits we will capitalize in H1 should more than make up for that. So the local currency bond is about 30 billion. A 20% haircut is about 6 billion. Right now, we're recognizing 80% of it. By the time we're running our H1 audited numbers, we'll be recognizing 60% of it. So an additional 6 billion will run off that. But we believe that the profits we will capitalize in H1 2018 will be above that 6 billion. So medium-term or short-term strategic objective is for it not to be below 16%. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question is from Nick Dimitrov. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Two quick questions. Can you provide some color on your restructure loans, what they are as a percentage of your book, and how they are performing? So that's going to be the first question. And the second question, I'm looking at your NPL guidance for 2018, 6%, 6.5% range. How are we going to get there if we assume that Nine Mobile gets classified as an NPL? And I think you said that the NPL ratio jumps to 8.7% if you assume that Nine Mobile gets classified as a non-performing loan. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Restructured loans are roughly 25% of the loan book. As you will know, under IFRS 9, from an impairment perspective, there is a higher charge on loans that have been restructured compared to IAS 39. So that's one of the reasons why we've had to we've taken an additional 28.2 billion charge on provisioning when we transition to IFRS 9. We believe that by H1 2018, we believe that the Nine Mobile sale would have been completed, and there will be more clarity in terms of the terms of the exposure for all the lenders. However, suffice to say that even though we've made a 50% provision on that exposure, which is about what the highest range you will find in the industry is, we do not have any bilateral exposures. We only have a syndicated loan there. So we do not expect that by the time the sale is finalized, there will be a need to classify the loan. However, the guidance we've given of 6 to 6.5% does not include a classification of this facility. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next question is from Alex Ayub. Please go ahead.
Hey, thanks. So just following up on the car. So I understand you want to stay at least above 16%, but what are the contingency plans you have in place in case, for example, you have to fully provision 9 mobile or in case the profitability is not as high as what you expect? That's question number one. Question number two is around your dollar balance sheet. Can you give us a feel what's the tenor of your dollar loan book, especially as you have very little dollar liquidity on your dollar balance sheet? And then also, just curious, thirdly, why were you so late to release your results? We understand like the deadline was, I think, just a few hours before you send them. Were you under investigation by the regulator, or what has caused these delays? Thank you.
Okay, sorry. I think I'll start with the last. I'll start with the last question. When the audit process commenced, we realized before the end of the period, which is March 31st, that given the stage we were in the audit process, we might not be able to meet the March 31st deadline, and that was due to two key reasons. Number one was due to the need to ensure that the consultants who were working on the IFRS 9 transition had enough time to do a detailed review. And number two was that there were certain exposures in the industry from a power sector segment that were also being reviewed by the regulators. So we wrote to the stock exchange, and we also informed the investor community that we will be delayed and we will release the results on or before April 30, 2018, and we did release on at that said period. Now, the stock exchange, typically, if you go to the stock exchange and ask for an extension, they give the quoted companies a 90-day extension. So we were not under any investigation by the regulators or by anybody. That answers the first question. The second question was on the contingency plan. I think we had to deal with this same question last year. If you look at our total exposure on 9Mobile, and you factor in the fact that we've taken a 50% haircut, if you look at what the balance of the 50% is, it's less than the audited profits we made in H1 2017. So we do not think that even if we have to take a 100% haircut on 9Mobile, it is going to affect us from a capital adequacy perspective, just given the level of profitability of the franchise. If you look at our profitability for 2017 financial year, 9Mobile, 50% of 9Mobile is slightly less than 40% of that. And we do not see any trend, given what we've seen in H1, to warrant the fact that profitability will be lower this year. We're not guiding for a lower profitability this year.
Please continue. Thank you.
Okay. We lost the last. We got lost on the call. I hope we had addressed the question asked by the last person. Or can we take the question again and take the answer again?
Thank you. I'll mute the line shortly. Thank you. Your line has been unmuted. Please ask your question. Thank you.
Hi. Sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes, Liz.
Hello? Can you hear me? Hey, yeah, sorry, I think we got cut. Perfect. Thanks for answering the question around the car. I think and around the contingency plan, but I think we just got cut halfway through when you were answering that question. So you said you don't expect car to decrease, which is fair, but, I mean, the macro situation can be weaker. So ultimately, what would you do if the situation becomes a bit more challenging and you have to provide for 9 mobile? So do you have a contingency plan or you don't have any? And then there was another question, I think, in relation to the tenor of your dollar loans and how you manage the liquidity on your dollar balance sheet.
Okay.
And I think
so,
if I can, like on the car, or go ahead, before I get cut, sorry, on the car, like why did you put non-distributable reserves? I mean, it seems like you had exactly the amount of non-distributable reserves as to the amount you needed to provide for IFRS 9, which seems strange, or maybe I'm just not familiar with the way it works. Thanks.
Okay, let me just explain what the non-distributable reserves are. You have the local accounting standards, and then you have the IAS 39, under which you do your impairment charge in the financials. Now, the central bank will assess banks using the local accounting standards, and then they will come up with the provisioning numbers. The difference between the provisioning numbers under the local accounting standards and the impairment calculated under IAS 39 is what goes into your non-distributable reserves, which it basically means in our own case that the provisions under the local accounting standards were higher than the provisions under IAS 39. Now, if you look at our non-distributable reserves in 2016 and compare it to 2017, you'll see that there was also a marked increase in that figure. So it's not like we had the figure sitting there and waiting for the IFRS 9 implementation. And the changes to your non-distributable reserves happens after your annual risk-based supervision by the central bank. So in some instances, some institutions don't have a lot of funds in non-distributable reserves because it means that your provisioning under the local accounting standard and IAS 39, the total figures, not from an obligor to obligor basis. They're just looking at the total portfolio. They're not looking at it from an obligor to obligor basis. So the non-distributable reserves already does not count as part of your qualifying capital from a capital adequacy perspective. So in our own instance, when the IFRS 9 numbers were done, and please note that the IFRS 9 numbers for Fidelity, IFRS 9 was handled by PricewaterhouseCoopers. Our auditors are Ernst & Young, so it's not even handled by the same firm. It was handled by a different firm. So they come up with the numbers, which are now validated, and then you now have to pass the adjustment in 2018 because this is the first year for IFRS 9. I hope that clarifies the question.
Yeah, it does clarify that question. Thank you very much. And I think there were two other questions.
Okay, so let me go to the capital adequacy. And so what I said on capital adequacy was that for us, we do not see any need for what you call a special contingency plan because of 9 mobile for two reasons. The total exposure, when we look at 50% of the total exposure, because we've already provided for 50% of the exposure, when we look at the balance of 50% of the exposure that we have not provided for, is less than 40% of the annual profits we make. It's less than the profits we declare for the 6 months, audited 6 months. So we do not think that there will be a deterioration in the macro scenario, which will now warrant Fidelity declaring less than 40% of the profits that we declared them last year. So we believe that even if we had to take 100% provisioning on 9 mobile for this financial year, we will generate sufficient profitability and there will still be excess profits to be written back to retained earnings. In terms of the average tenor of the dollar loan book, one of the reasons why we went to the international capital markets last year was to extend the duration of the liquidity of the dollar loan book. We had issued a bond in 2013, and then we had financed the divestment by the IOCs. And then when the oil prices came down and those loans had to be restructured, we had to extend the tenor of those loans by an average of 18 to 36 months. And that is why we now have to go and refinance the underlying liquidity that was used to fund those assets so that we match the tenor. So the average tenor of the dollar loan book right now is anything between 3.5 to 4.5 years on the average. And from the long-term funding perspective, we believe that it's adequately matched. So a lot of those assets are not funded directly from the deposit book of the bank. A lot of them are funded using long-term borrowings and debt. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And if I'm still on the line, just quickly on Q1, what was the level of NPL and provisioning in Q1?
The NPL for Q1 was 6.3%, and the level of provisioning, is it the provisioning as a charge or the provisioning cover? So provisioning as a charge was about 0.4%.
Okay, perfect. They muted me, sorry. Just the provisioning level. So, I mean, how much provision you have against your NPLs? Was it around 100% still, or was lower? I was just concerned because, like you mentioned, that you had a lot of watch list names which were still not classified. I wasn't too sure the extent of that and classification.
It was 117% for Q1. The provisioning coverage ratio for Q1 was 111.7%, sorry. For Q1, it was 111.7%. Actual provisioning numbers in terms of the charge was 702 million, and the total NPL book was about 50 billion. About 50 billion.
Perfect. And just the watch list non-NPL names, how much of them were watch list but not NPL?
Major one is Nye Mobile.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Once again, to ask a question, please press 0 on your phone's keypad or 7 to cancel a question request. Thank you. Your next question is from Sawarati from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi. Just a quick question in terms of the your earning expectations for 2018. I mean, if we look at 2017 versus 2016, so your profit before tax was up 83%, and your 17 earnings are 30% higher than your, you know, in terms of the recent highs that we've seen in 2014. So it's not inconceivable to think that 2018 results could be, you know, quite a bit lower than 2017. So, you know, to the earlier question with regards to contingencies, it would be good to get some idea as to, you know, what the fallback position is if earnings indeed are lower than we've seen in 2017.
Okay. I think there's been a lot of questions about the sustainability of the earnings. I think from where we sit and what we've seen for Q1, and I think as we speak, we've seen, basically looked at numbers from the beginning of Q2, and we do not see any reason to believe that earnings will decline 2018 compared to 2017. Obviously, we're not going to have the same growth rate of 94% between 2018 and 2017. We are actually projecting a growth of about 25% in earnings for the 2018 financial year. And we'll stick to that guidance. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Gloria Fadibre. Please go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, please. I just need a little clarification on the story around...
We seem to have lost Gloria. Your next question is from Samrati. Please go ahead.
So just to follow up on that, if the impairment charge had been taken through the P&L on Nine Mobile, what would have been your net income for 2017?
If the impairment had been taken directly through P&L, that would have brought in possibly another 5 billion. But don't forget that we already had the consultants working on the IFRS 9 transition, and then we had the auditors working on the book. And so I think it will have impacted it by roughly another 6 billion, roughly 6 billion. Yeah, it will have impacted profitability by another 6 billion. But from an equity perspective, shareholders' funds perspective, it wouldn't have made any difference, because at the end of the day, they're both still going to flow into your retained earnings. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, to ask a question, please press 0 on your phone's keypad or 7 to cancel your question request. Thank you. Your next question is for Samrati. Please go ahead.
Just one more question then from me. On so what's the payout ratio?
It's about 17% for the 2017 financial year.
You have a follow-up question from Samrati. Please go ahead.
Sorry, I think the line got cut off. So what was the payout ratio?
It was about 17% for the 2017 financial year. Thank you.
And given that, how close you are sailing to the wind in terms of capital, is it really be prudent to be paying out dividends at this juncture?
Well, given how close we are, I think post IFRS 9 implementation, we're at 16%. We don't think we're going to ever have to fall below that 16%, given the profit trajectory for the year. So, yes, we think it's still we're still in line paying out dividends to shareholders, given the earnings trajectory of the business. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
There are currently no questions at this time. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much for participating in this call. And just to assure you that we'll continue to execute our medium-term strategy the way we did last year that showed these numbers. We look forward to, you know, equally strong performance by H1 2018. And we'll continue to audit half yearly, like I had mentioned earlier. So on that note, I thank everybody for participating in this call. Thank you.
That concludes today's call. Thank you.